Good morning. Members also are back. Obviously, we meet at a time when the province of KwaZulu-Natal is going through severe distress. We all know that, the horrific flood disaster, not least in my own hometown of St. Josie, but it's not as bad, let me stress, as in Etegwini and the coastal area, as you know. And all of us in different ways are preoccupied with that. But for now, we are meeting to consider the third quarter report of the AFS Financial Sector Conduct Authority. As you will know, those of you who are around before this term began, that's particularly I'm afraid only, this flowed from the revamping of our financial sector regulation, the Twin Peaks model as it's called. There's further legislation coming our way when it goes through the NA. And this institution, Financial Sector Conduct Authority, as you'll hear more later today, emerges in part from the Twin Peaks model. It's a tightening of financial regulations to ensure that we seek to reduce the 2008 financial crisis recurring. It's not a guarantee, but it's an attempt. It's particularly concerned to ensure, if you like, that the financial sector behaves and that those of us who are customers of it get a fair deal, and that through its work it contributes, together with other institutions that have been set up, and the department and ourselves as Parliament, to financial sector transformation that many of us seek to ensure happens. So over then to, and we must, before we go there, on behalf of the whole committee, express our deepest condolences to those who have lost family members in the floods. And, of course, our solidarity with those who have lost in terms of property, and others who've been injured and who are now destitute. And as usual, as always happens, it's disproportionately the poor and the disadvantaged that suffer the most. And ultimately, it comes back to the point that we and other committees have been raising about the need to maintain our infrastructure, the need to manage our funds better, the need to avoid corruption, and the need to have effective managers and councillors and MPs and MPLs. But those are issues that we dealt with in the next 2 weeks and more in the broader structures of the NCOP and Parliament as a whole. Over then to the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. I think 45 minutes or so would be reasonable, maximum an hour, and then we have questions. I know that members are conflicted because we firstly have thrust upon us, from what I can gather, from the committee section at the very last moment, another program today that requires all of us to be there, but we've been exempt, as Nicolette indicated, and so have I, through our WhatsApp chat group. But also I know that today we are meant to be reporting to our provinces and getting mandates. And in my case, I'm okay because we set tentatively for 12:30, although a notice is still pending, and I'm trying to pursue that. So I won't be affected, but some of you may have to leave, and your priority is to your provincial legislature, so you can exit when you have to. Then over to FSCA. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Chair. Let me try and share the presentation. And as you have guided, Chair, it should be about 30 minutes or so. And then we'll be able to take questions. Now, I do have colleagues of mine who have joined.
Nothing, we know you, but can you introduce yourself, please, and your team here, please?
I'll just one out, Chair. Thank you very much. My name is Unathi Kamlana. I am the Commissioner of the FSCA, appointed April 2021. I have, together with me this morning on the call, I'm not sure if they've already been able to join, actually. I've got, I think, Deputy Commissioner Fazana Badat. I think she's been able to join. I've got the CFO of the FSCA, Mr. Paul Gagana. I also have joining this morning the Divisional Executive Retirement Funds, Mr. Olano Makubela, and I have Mr. Rami Mbiti, who's our CRO, and Ms. Tembisa Makhele, our head of comms. So that's the team that I think I can confirm now. The list has joined us. Can I ask Rami to load the presentation and drive the slides for me? And then we can get started. Rami, are you on the line? All right.
In the meanwhile, you can take us through. I mean, you're so familiar with these.
Yes.
It while you sleep. So really, we've got some anyway on our emails yesterday, or in fact earlier in the week, last week, and again yesterday. So we have it. But in the meanwhile, Nkululeko, can you help Rami to put it on the screen? And in the meanwhile, you can go ahead. I'm sure Nati, you can speak to it. Yeah.
Yes,
Let's go ahead.
Happy to talk to you, Chair. So by way of background, I thought I'd just spend a minute or so to talk to the context within which we are making this presentation. The background you've already given, Chair, that we are a product of the Twin Peaks reforms, which really was a response to the global financial crisis. We needed to review the historical bank versus non-bank regulatory architecture, which we had to the 2008 global financial crisis, and of course, up to 2018 when we introduced Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks is a regulatory architecture where we are regulating by objective. So the Financial Sector Conduct Authority is responsible for market conduct comprehensively across the financial sector. And a separate entity, the Prudential Authority, looks after microprudential aspects, and that entity is located within the SAR. to talk briefly about the COVID-19 context. Firstly, that it's a very important lens through which to understand customer issues in the financial sector, with the transformation that the sector has experienced in terms of digital adoption. So major changes in terms of how the sector interacts with financial customers because of the COVID-19 pandemic, people working remotely, and so on. And I think also important, our own adaptability and agility to regulate and supervise in that space. So looking at the performance of the regulatory entity that we are, I think that's an important
recording in progress.
The COVID-19 pandemic. The FSCA, just to make that point, for 3 years since 2018, it was led by a Transitional Management Committee, TMC, until last year, as I've indicated, when the minister appointed a permanent commissioner and three deputy commissioners, really to provide stability at the top of the organization, which has helped in terms of strategic direction and so on. So that was an important change that took place last year. A little bit about the legal mandate of the FSCA for four aspects to the mandate of the organization. The first talking to efficiency and integrity in financial markets, so our responsibility in both listed and unlisted markets. I'll talk a little bit later about the institution types that we are responsible to regulate and supervise. The second aspect is really anchored around treating customers fairly, so promoting fair outcomes for customers by licensed and regulated financial institutions. The third aspect being really consumer education, so promoting financial literacy, providing financial education programs in terms of what is required of us by the Financial Sector Regulation Act. And the fourth aspect, which applies to both the FSCA and the Prudential Authority, is this responsibility that we have to assist the SARB in terms of their macroprudential financial stability objectives. So those are the four aspects which are outlined in our founding legislation, the Financial Sector Regulation Act. In terms of coverage, so our regulatory scope, hopefully you can see this diagram clearly. So the two PICs are responsible for the same set of institution types, and we drive the different regulatory objectives as I was outlining before. So part of the important change to the responsibilities of the then FSB compared to the FSCA in the addition of banking, retail banking, commercial banking, and payment providers to the regulatory scope of the FSCA. And then in addition to those, we're responsible for insurers, retirement funds, and retirement benefit administrators as well, and also asset managers, financial advisory and intermediary services, and financial market infrastructure. So the point I was making earlier, talking about our integrity and efficiency mandate, we are responsible for regulating exchanges, central securities depositories, central counterparties, so-called CCPs, and also in the unlisted space, ODPs, over-the-counter derivative providers, which is a new institution type that we are responsible for. And I've already spoken to the four components in terms of our legal mandate. Apologies, I see that towards the end, we're cutting off the assist in maintaining. What we are missing on the slide is financial stability, which I've already spoken to. So a little bit then about the performance for quarter three. Firstly, just to say that, and I will show this in the next slide, the next couple of slides, some of the objectives or targets that were not met in quarter three were actually met in the subsequent quarter. And although I'll be talking about quarter three, because that's the ask or the exam question for today, I will just show where we've made progress since quarter three and what various aspects we were able to cover. In terms of the objectives to understand, you know, these targets are delivering on these objectives. So we had these six objectives for the period 2018 to 2021. Last year, we did a thoroughgoing strategy review in the organization, and I'll take you through later the new objectives going forward for the next 3 years. But to understand the performance of quarter three, this was delivering on these existing, if you like, objectives which were in existence at the time. The first one, building a new organization, obviously important given that this was a new entity, newly established successor entity to the FSB in the period 2018 to 2021. Second one, very key to the mandate of the FSA, financial inclusion and transformation. And I'll talk a little bit about what we're doing in that space. The third one, given the new mandate of the organization, there was a need to build a robust regulatory framework that promotes fair customer treatment. And we'll explain what we've been doing around that. And the fourth objective, the point I was making earlier about consumer education and ensuring that we have informed financial customers and empowering them. We'll talk to that. And the next one is the efficiency and integrity objective in terms of our mandate. And the last one, the need for us to be responding to new ways of doing business and disruptive technologies, the whole theme of how do we support innovation and competition in the financial sector. In terms of the performance for quarter three itself, so out of 30 targets, we achieved 23, which I will explain in the next few slides. And seven were not achieved in that quarter. Some of them, as I will show in the later slides, we were able to achieve, to add to the 23 that was achieved in Q3. And one we excluded because it had a dependency on warrants being issued. It talks to us needing to execute warrants within an agreed time frame. But for quarter three, there were no warrants, no search and seizure and similar type of warrants which were issued. So we've excluded this in terms of talking about performance for the quarter. Just to take you through, and I'll talk to just a few highlights, Chair, in terms of what we're able to achieve, but of course I'm happy to take questions in terms of even stuff that I will not be highlighting on the slide. You know, the administration program, one of the things that are important for us is engagement, stakeholder engagement, and being able to be out there to provide information in terms of the mandate of the organization. And we're able to achieve all of those targets with regards to media interaction, including broadcast media, community radio interviews, a media monitoring report so that we can have a sense of how we are doing and who is following some of the messages that we are sending out there, publishing our quarterly newsletter. And so we were able to achieve those targets. Moving to the licensing and business center, the target that we had set for ourselves there was to process at least 80% of all received applications within 90 days. And that's important to explain here. So we don't target a number of licenses to issue. So we don't auction licenses. So we respond to demand. So to the extent that there are applications, for various types of licenses, we target that we should be able to process at least 80% of those within 90 days, and we exceeded that slightly over 80% in that quarter. Moving to regulatory policy, we set a target for workshops. So the outcome here is to improve brand awareness, financial literacy, so all the work around awareness and understanding of people's rights when it comes to their interactions with the financial sector. We met and exceeded a few of those targets, including the workshops, the exhibitions, the speech competition, which we worked together with provincial departments of education. We were able to do 83 of those. And responding to 90% of queries that we receive, within 28 days of receipt, we were able to exceed that. We responded to 98% of the queries that we received within that stipulated time frame. In terms of market integrity, so the financial markets infrastructure supervision, we had a target of conducting an inspection, one inspection, which we were able to do in that quarter. In terms of retirement funds, one of the targets was 80% of inspections according to the risk-based supervisory plan that we have. We were able to exceed that. Similarly, in terms of our ability to analyze the return that we receive from licensed entities, we were able to analyze 100% of those returns in terms of off-site analysis. On product of business supervision, again, as outlined on the slide, we were able to exceed a few of those targets, including offset analysis on the basis of the returns that we received from FSPs, financial services providers, and also the desktop reviews that analysts perform in respect of investment providers. We were able to achieve 86% against an 80% target. On enforcement, which is quite important in the space of conduct regulation and supervision, we've outlined there the targets that we set for ourselves. Executing administrative sanctions, we have set a target of 90%. We were able to achieve 100%. On providing assistance to partner agencies in the law enforcement space, we were able to achieve that target at 100%. And also we do receive some requests for assistance from international regulators and sister regulators abroad, and we were able to provide that assistance at 100% target. The point I was making earlier about excluding this target number 24 because there were no warrants that were obtained in quarter three, so that's why we highlight that part. All right, in terms of administration, two aspects to this, and I'm now getting on to some of the things that we were not able to achieve in quarter three. The first one talks to being able to pay 100% of valid suppliers' invoices within 30 days. We achieved 93% in quarter three. Year to date, we achieved 94%, so we still had a shortfall of 6%. And part of the issue here is that sometimes there are valid or legitimate queries that our finance professionals raise, which are not resolved or resolvable within 30 days. And then you are not able to meet that 100% every month. But of course, 94% in our assessment is still quite a good achievement in that space. In terms of employment equity, there's a few things on this. So our targets, 50% female, 50% male in terms of staff composition, and 2% coming from employees with living with disabilities, and 90% of the staff complement coming from the black group, which is comprised of 79% African, 7% colored, 4% Indian, and the target for the white group being 10%. And as you can see, in terms of our achievement, we are above 50% target for female colleagues, which of course is not a bad problem to have. So we've got a slight over representation of female colleagues, 45% male. An area that we are grappling with is this one of being able to attract colleagues living with disabilities. We're at 0.7% against our target of 2%. We have actually recently approved a strategy of attracting specifically colleagues from this group, and also trying to encourage our colleagues internally to declare various disabilities as well, which is another way of dealing with this. In terms of representation from the black group, we are at 79% African, so we've met that, but we are slightly below our target for coloureds and slightly below our target for Indians. And 12% is 2% overrepresentation against our target of 10% from the white group. And we are using both our recruitment in terms of existing vacancies and natural attrition to deal with this. But overall, we're still comfortable that this is an area that is well managed if you look at what we've been able to achieve as an organization. In terms of regulatory policy, and this may be talking specifically to the regulatory sandbox, which is another area where we did not achieve our target of 90% of regulatory sandbox test cases resolved within 6 months. Part of the challenge that we have here is the complexity of some of these test cases, which makes it difficult to resolve within 6 months. And we are looking at adjusting some of these targets given the experience that we now have with various test cases. So we've not achieved the 90% target in terms of resolution of this. Moving on to the conduct of business supervision side. So the first one, talking to workshops that we host to upskill various small financial services providers. We achieved 3 out of 5. And part of the challenge that we have here is that these workshops are preferred to be face-to-face given the nature of the interaction. But of course, as some of the COVID-19 restrictions are now lifted, we should be able to meet this target going forward. The rest, just to say that although some were not achieved in quarter three, we've been able to achieve and exceed the targets for item number 6 and 7 in terms of the subsequent quarter. Just to talk a little bit about some of the risks or challenges or gaps that we've identified in terms of the work of the organization, and I want to talk to every one of these, able to come back if there are questions. The first one is how central it is for us to be able to disseminate information to various stakeholders and regulated entities. And we found that with the fast pace of changes in the financial sector, in addition to the COVID-19 pandemic, which has resulted in completely different ways of working and interaction, we've had to adjust our engagement model. And we're satisfied, of course, that we have in place good strategies to mitigate this, including making sure that we continuously engage with our stakeholders through various means and various channels and platforms that are available to us. The second one talks to a project that is quite central to our digital transformation strategy or journey as the organization, investing in an integrated regulatory system. The project has now been affected by the Treasury's instruction to stop all tenders, given the outcome of the judgment that they are waiting from the Constitutional Court. In the meantime, we've been doing what we can, which is to entrench project governance throughout the project life cycle internally. And we're hoping, of course, that as soon as Treasury resolves the situation with regards to PPFA, we should be able to deliver this project on time. The next one talks to the work that we do with partners in participating in the work of the Financial Sector Transformation Council. Although we've participated in that work for over a period of time, there has been some delays in terms of finalizing the financial sector code, and this is something that we have taken up with the National Treasury, and we've noted in various interactions within the Financial Sector Transformation Council and its subcommittees. In terms of the legislative framework, the point just to make here is that sometimes the feeling is that we aren't able to have a legislative framework that can quickly adapt to or respond to some of the emerging risks and trends that we see in the conduct space. And what we do is to proactively conduct research, focus research to inform regulatory framework changes, but also to inform supervisory approaches as we pick up trends that we view as risky in terms of the work of the organization. The point around capacity and skills, I think there's two issues there. The first is the need for us to continuously be responding to changes in the financial sector, given that that is where we are applying our trade. The second one is about the new additions to the regulatory scope of the entity and us needing to recruit skills that traditionally we did not have in the organization. But this is an area of ongoing work, and we think we are managing to have this covered so far. The next point on the Financial Sector Regulation Act, a few things here. The first one is that there are areas where we're needing to clarify delineations in terms of our responsibilities, where they start and end, the responsibilities of others, like the Council of Medical Schemes, and of course the responsibilities of the Prudential Authority. So there are various sub-teams which are in place to drive that work. The second aspect of this is some of the transitional arrangements that you have in the Financial Sector Regulation Act, which pertain to the regulatory responsibility, for example, around retirement funds, collective investment schemes, friendly societies, and so on. We were given 3 years in the Act to sort this out. Given the nature of work, we approached the Minister for an extension, and we have an extension until 2024 to resolve some of those regulatory delineations in terms of a transitional arrangement. So that's the long and short in terms of that part of work. The next one talks to the COFI bill framework, which is an important development in terms of the legislative underpin in the conduct space. The future framework envisages collapsing all conduct specific or conduct relevant parts that you have in sectoral law into the COFI bill. And that does mean that a lot of work needs to happen around subordinate legislation which supports that. And this work has taken longer than we had anticipated. But Treasury is aware of this, and we're working very closely with Treasury and others to make sure that we progress this work timelessly. See, it's important to have in place, but we quite understand why it cannot be rushed through, given its impact. Chair, perhaps to talk to one or two on this slide, perhaps the one that talks about the project that we have to develop conduct of business returns, focusing now on the insurance sector, but of course we will also roll that out in other industries in the financial sector as well, so that we can have a complete set and reliable and accurate data in terms of customer experiences, because that's really then going to enable us to focus better the regulatory framework and also supervisory interactions. The last one, the work that is ongoing on regulating and making sure that there's better understanding of responsibilities of trustees and some of the governance challenges which pertain to retirement funds. And we can talk a little bit more about this if there are questions later as well. Maybe just to talk to the very last one on this slide, Chair, which is about the Environmental, Social and Governance Protocol, so ESG. This is an area, an emerging area that's quite important to get right, I think especially in retirement funds and asset management in general. We have been doing work with the IFC and World Bank to help anchor our approach as a regulator in terms of what guidance we will provide in this area. Chair, perhaps quick quickly to take the committee through the new focus areas, new strategic focus areas of the FSCA. We have now five new objectives for the next 3 years. The first one, talking to really embedding TCF, treating customers fairly, outcomes throughout the sector. And we're now pivoting to more supervisory approaches as opposed to the regulatory framework development, which we spent a bit of time doing in the last 3 years. The second is about action against misconduct. I did make the point earlier about how important it is to have enforcement actions serve as a credible deterrent against bad behavior. We are focusing specific effort and resources in driving enforcement in a responsible way. In a responsible way in this area. The third one is in terms of our approach to innovation. I did make the point earlier. It's quite important for us to drive innovation in a responsible way. There are specific customer or consumer issues which pertain to innovation, but also we have an additional responsibility to support competition in the financial sector and, of course, inclusion and sustainability as well. So that's another area of focus. The fourth one, and this talks mainly to financial education and how we can assist and empower households and small businesses and vulnerable groups in general to be financially resilient. And our specific vantage point here is around the provision of financial education programs and partnering the sector and others with resources and expertise and know-how in this area to deliver on that. The last one is more of an internal focus where we are transforming the organization to be very responsive and agile in terms of our interactions and approaches and in the delivery of the solutions, the regulatory and supervisory solutions that we are responsible for. So those are the five objectives. We published the new regulatory strategy towards the end of last year. And that really is how we're going to be anchoring the work of the organization in the next 3 years. I'm going to skip a few of the slides because they just talk to the things I've already articulated. And I'm going to talk to this last one before we can then open it up and take questions, Chair. This is a draft strategy that we have published recently on the role of the FSCA in promoting transformation in the financial sector. The Financial Sector Regulation Act, one of the objects of the Act is transformation in the financial sector. And although transformation is not made in FSRA to be an explicit responsibility or mandate of either the FSCA or the PA, the overall objective of the Act, I think, makes it sufficiently clear that it is important for us to articulate what our role and contribution is going to be. The way we are approaching this is in terms of two phases, with the first phase really being the work that we will do within the existing or the current legislative framework, starting with supervisory engagement with licensed institutions, making contributions to really improve the quality and availability of data on transformation and using that information to engage on transformation plans with the various financial institutions. The third aspect of this is obviously to work with others in this space, so the Financial Sector Transformation Council and the BBBE Commission being one of those key actors that we need to be partnering and working with, and we are in ongoing engagements with them, including, of course, supporting initiatives in NEDLAC where we participate. And also, quite important here, there are responsibilities which are clear in terms of transformation for the Prudential Authority. And we need to make sure that we are coordinated in this space, in how we engage the sector. So that's That's really the first phase. The second phase, and this is subject to obviously the progress around the coffee bill, will then move to making transformation a much more clear and explicit responsibility of the FSCA in terms of us being a financial sector regulator, because of course the Schulbe Commission has got its own responsibility, and to formalize our engagement with the Schulbe Commission and the Financial Sector Transformation Council. And then of course quite important for us to continue to evaluate the effectiveness of the legislative framework, of the policy framework, and how they are applied. And part of the what is important is the change here is then the ability of the regulator to take action on the basis of whatever transformation plans and targets and commitments have been made by financial institutions. And of course, this is part of engagement starting from agreeing on transformation plans based on targets and commitments that are made by the sector, to walking the journey with financial institutions individually in terms of what commitments they've made. So that's what we have. We've published this. It's still out for public comment until the 29th of April, after which we will review and refine and then publish our final strategy on the basis of those engagements. That is the last slide, Chair. I'm happy now to take any questions, respond to any comments that members might have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. Over then to members, whose hands are up in Kulele Kuli Help Me. I see Dennis Ryder. Is anybody else? Okay, Dennis, go for it. And then the
Mr. Moletane and Mr. Titoiche.
I see all these hands up. Go for it, gentlemen.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Kamlana, for the presentation. Much appreciated. It was a very clinical and a very formal presentation. So look, I've got a couple of questions that I'm going to ask. I'll ask you to highlight. So first of all, you introduced Ms. Badat at the beginning. Now I note that her and Ms. Gibson were both appointed during the quarter that's under review that you're presenting on today. Perhaps you could just give us some information around, how they've been incorporated, what their role is, what they'll be up to during their 5-year term at the authority. You can perhaps tell us a little bit more around that. Then, as I say, a very clinical presentation, and you gave us lots of facts. Perhaps you can give us a little bit more information around the trends, what you've picked up, what has come out the woodwork in terms of conduct from the financial services industry. What are the issues that you're chasing? Perhaps you can give us some information about, what the alarm bells are. So obviously the FSCA exists for a reason. What steps and measures have you taken? What have you found out? What have you done as a result of that? I think that would be quite useful to us. So the next thing, you probably don't have to answer this, but you've got your racial quotas that you listed, and you indicate how you're meeting those. Perhaps you can just tell us if you use the pencil test to determine which category people fall into. You don't have to answer that. It's just an unpleasant issue that, we remain stuck in apartheid era classifications. And then the biggest question that I have for you, Mr. Kamlana, relates to a tweet that was sent out by a lady by the name of Magda Wierczyka. Now, I can't share my screen, but the tweet was put out on the 20th of February. Now, I know that Twitter is not the real world, but the tweet says that it makes quite an important allegation. Now, Ms. Wierczyka is the CEO of a very prominent financial services company and has quite a high profile in the country and certainly on Twitter. And the tweet reads as follows, and I'm going to quote it if I may. It says, I was once told by a CEO of a major bank in South Africa that they wish that they were subpoenaed to disclose the transactions they see going through many high-profile accounts, but they wait in vain. So my comment on that is it's quite a scary allegation, and I think that, that certainly the existence of the FSCA and the FIC should be giving these bank executives the opportunity to make such disclosures and declarations and comments quite freely. Now, you know, as far as I'm concerned, look, and I know you've got the FIC is not part of the FSCA. I understand that, but you do have a memorandum of understanding with each other. And the question is, are there open discussions with CEOs of banks or with bank, you know, not necessarily with a CEO, but with banking structures, which would enable them to make such declarations? Because if they haven't made such declarations, first of all, I believe that they are contravening the FIC Act. But second of all, you know, it would also be quite important to your mandate to investigate, you know, any comments such as this, which indicate that there's information being withheld, which would have a material impact on the financial services industry operation in South Africa. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Mr. Malatane, and then Mr. Juto, you know the order. I'm not going to intervene again. Go for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first start by acknowledging the presentation. I've got one question with me here. It is based on the under the achievement targets, hashtag number 17, where they said that one awareness program to educate communities utilizing bank services. I just want to check with them whether was the awareness program done for the communities across the color. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm going to leave my camera off. We're experiencing load shedding. Chair, I want to know, I understand the transformation mandates, but I want to know what measures are in place to widen the transformation sector instead of transforming, or to widen this sector instead of transforming it with legislation. A large percentage of individuals are discriminated against on the basis of race. It's obvious. I want to know, is there a sunset clause in this sector that will do away with race-based transformation, allowing the financial sector to grow and thrive without interference? Thank you, Chair.
Is there anybody else? Okay, while we're waiting for others to come in. Look, very quickly, firstly, I'd like to know a bit more about what you do. I saw what you've got on your slide on efficiency and integrity of financial institutions. Secondly, how are you ensuring more competition in a highly monopolized or concentrated financial sector, and how are you encouraging inclusiveness? Thirdly, you speak about financial literacy, empowering households and small businesses in financial literacy over the next 3-year period. You've been doing part of that. Can you tell us a bit more about that? Then you say, understandably, that you need some regulatory and legislative perhaps changes, because as you know, do your job, you pick up things that either the legislation or the regulations haven't kept. Obviously, you're raising this. Well, presumably, you're raising this at National Treasury. And, you know, can you tell us a few things more specifically about what you would like to change, especially in the legislative part, but also perhaps the regulatory part? Now, you're asking for another 2 years for transitional arrangements. You recall you sat through the process of the finance sector regulation bill, and we did discuss this and so on. But 2 more years is quite long. Maybe you want to explain why you need it, though you seem to have got it already, but still. Then you talk about the role of the PA, Council of Medical Schemes, is blurred with the conduct authority. That, too, you'll recall, We didn't speak so much about Council of Medical Schemes, but the PA. Obviously, the roles overlap to some extent, or certainly complementary. But the Council of Medical Schemes, what's the issue there? I don't fully understand. Maybe we'll spell that out, but also on the PA, you know, role overlapping with yours and being blurred with yours, can you say a bit more? Then on the COFIBO, I notice you all conduct legislative regulatory aspects on the equipment of the bill. Well, this bill is meant to come. We wait for it. And then I want to stress yet again that personally and for my party and I think a majority of certainly don't believe you can have non-racialism without affirmative action. We're not saying affirmative action should be applied crudely, but I want to compliment you for the overall representative nature of the conduct authority. Normally in the financial sector, as you know, it's very dominated by whites and Indian South Africans, and so-called coloreds and Africans have been underrepresented. So I would like to congratulate you on where you've got, which is not to say I crudely support appointing people simply on the basis of their skin color or gender, as long as they have reasonably competent skills in regard to the roles they play. We must affirm them. So I can't see how our increasingly racially polarized society, underlying which a class and, you know, social strata differences can ever be reduced as polarization without affirming that more and more African people should take more and more dominant roles in the financial sector particularly, as it's so underrepresented as a whole by them. Which is not to say that people must be rejected purely because they're white or Indian. That too would be a form of racism, but, you know, there are many Africans now emerging from the universities and elsewhere. And you seem to snap up people, you know, from National Treasury, Orlando being one of them. And, of course, you've got, if you still have a former member of the committee, you know, on the National Assembly side, and I think you would want more. You yourself, I come from the Reserve Bank, I think, and previously I'm told was in National Treasury. So their gripe is they lose people like you, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong about that, but it doesn't apply to you. It certainly applies to Orlando and others. Well, sometimes they deploy, so to speak, or steer people from their ranks to go to you. But look, congratulations on your representativity. I'm not sure about gender, eh? So can you tell us a bit about that? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to attempt a few of these questions, but so that my colleagues can be ready. Let me ask, after my intervention, for Ms. Luden, Deputy Commissioner Luden, to talk to the question around efficiency and integrity of financial institutions and our approach to supporting competition and inclusion. And I will ask Mr. Makubela to talk a little bit about some of the legislative developments. It can be both in the retirement fund space, but also broadly the work on COFI and some of the issues around scope between ourselves, CMS, and the Prudential Authority. And I will deal with the rest. And of course, all the colleagues on the line can also chip in where they'd like to. On the roles and responsibilities of the Deputy Commissioners, starting with Deputy Commissioner Farzana Badat, she's responsible for conduct of business supervision. She's also responsible for the Office of the General Counsel. So those are her primary areas of responsibility. And in addition, she's responsible for licensing and business center. So that will be that's her portfolio in the organization. Deputy Commissioner Astrid Luden is responsible for retirement funds and market integrity and also the specialist support functional area in the organization. And then last but not least, Ms. Catherine Gibson is responsible for regulatory policy. And also she's responsible for the enforcement area.
in the organization. So those are the responsibilities of the deputy commissioners, and the rest I'm responsible for. In terms of trends that we were picking up, a couple of things. The first one is the point I was making earlier around digital adoption. So COVID-19 has really moved this trend of digital adoption at quite a very high rate, given, of course, the way of working that was thrust upon us by the need to manage COVID-19. And there are specific issues around that from a customer perspective. The first is that while technology in general is beneficial for customers as well as the sector, there are things that it assumes. It assumes access to data, for example, so that customers are able to access financial institutions, and it's not always the case. So there is a need for financial institutions to be quite aware and careful of not leaving some segments, customer segments, behind in the digital transformation or digital adoption journey. So that's one. Part of that linked very closely to it is the fact that given COVID-19, you've had, especially in the banking sector, the closure of many physical branches. And there is an important customer segment that still prefers the physical interaction with financial institutions. So the way to manage that so that it does not negatively affect the customer experience and customer outcomes has been one of the focus areas of our conversation with the banking sector in the period. So that talks to digital adoption. One of the other major trends, given COVID-19, a lot of retirement funds were faced with trouble, and we've seen this issue of arrear contributions being one where we needed to make interventions and to engage the retirement fund sector, especially where deductions would be made from employees or members of funds, and those would not be paid over to the fund. Of course, that would be employers tackling the issues of sustainability with the need, of course, to be looking after member interests in terms of funding their retirement benefits. So that was an area of particular focus. The area of crypto assets and people finding themselves exposed to these types of investments, which currently are not regulated. We are doing work together with others in the official sector to develop and to put in place a regulatory framework for crypto assets so that we can provide clear protection and a clear view from an education perspective in terms of what the underlying investments actually mean, so that people are in a better position to decide whether this is the space where they want to be investing their hard-earned money. The area of unlicensed insurance, I think every time there is a kind of economic turmoil, unlicensed insurance and illegal deposit taking, where there are schemes and scams that try to take money from unsuspecting retail financial customers. That's been an area where we've needed to rethink our approach and resource ourselves adequately to respond, because there are specific areas of customer or consumer harm that we've picked up in those spaces. So those would be some of the trends that I can talk to now. Maybe I can refer the committee to quite an interesting and helpful study that we've just published called the Financial Sector Outlook Study, which looks at all the different industries that we regulate and supervises the FSCA, and it talks to some of the risks and trends that we have observed in the recent past to sort of augment the responses I've given here. To talk to this issue of the tweet,
perhaps just to say there, what is maybe important is just to explain that around AML-CFT, the way that we've arranged ourselves is that the Prudential Authority in the sub is responsible for AML-CFT outcomes as they pertain to the banking sector. So that's the first one. The second one is perhaps to ask, to answer the broader question around platforms which are made available to CEOs and other senior executives of licensed financial institutions. Regardless of whether people have been subpoenaed or not, they have full access to both the PA and ourselves on any issue that would be of concern to them. So I'm not able to properly locate where, what informed the comment on the tweet, because I don't think there are senior executives in any of our licensed entities who withhold information waiting to be called if they know that that information is relevant for regulatory outcomes. I'd be very surprised. So that's what I'll say about that. But the primary responsibility for AML-CFT outcomes in the sector, in the banking sector, is the Prudential Authority in the SAR. On the questions around the empowerment workshops and whether those cover across the color line, yes, absolutely. The criteria that is used there is, in terms of the target audience, it's vulnerable groups and small and medium-sized entities, small, medium, and micro, entities, and those would be across across the racial lines. The objective, of course, is empowerment and resilience, and that is what we focus on in terms of those interventions. I hope that helps. On transformation, just to say that, so we don't design the transformation interventions. As I've outlined on the slides, we are working on the basis of the existing policy and legislative framework that's driven, as you will know, by the DTI, and will be e-commission as the primary regulator in that space. We obviously have an interest as the financial sector regulator broadly from the fact that transformation is an important objective for the country, but also specifically that it talks to trust and confidence in the financial sector, which is an important question around sustainability and financial stability, which are things that we drive so that you don't lose momentum and therefore you don't find yourself in a situation of financial instability, when all of us can be engaging in a proactive way to make sure that there are meaningful transformation outcomes in the sector. And just to say, of course, in our engagements with executives in the financial sector, this appreciation is really, really high, and the agenda itself is very high on the agendas, on the discussions of various boards of financial institutions. I will now then ask you if you can talk to this issue of efficiency and integrity, approach to competition and inclusion. The only thing I'll say around competition, I think there was a question about the transformation of incumbents versus encouraging new entrants. And of course, quite agree. We see these as mutually reinforcing. So it's not one versus the other. There are imperatives around the transformation of incumbents, as we've outlined, but also we are quite focused on making sure that the regulatory framework and the legislative framework is actually does not impede licensing and in fact sustainability of new entrants as well. Let me hand over to Astrid. Over to you.
Thank you, Commissioner, and good morning, honourable members. So if we talk about the financial markets, I'm really going to touch on the capital markets here primarily. And as I'm sure the members are aware, we have five exchanges in South Africa, although one of them is currently still suspended. We have two licensed central securities depository, and we're in the process of licensing an independent clearinghouse. So that is sort of the infrastructure that we have in the capital markets area. And, you know, the as in many other jurisdictions, our regulatory framework, as contained in the Financial Markets Act, is very much geared around a sort of single exchange, single central securities depository environment. And I think, you know, many of the practices in the market have maintained, I suppose, that kind of structure. So our focus has been, of course, the licensing of new exchanges and a new CSD has raised, you know, a whole host of issues around how one manages relationships between exchanges, for example, trades across exchanges, and how does one make this facilitative for all the actors in the value chain. For example, how does one make it as easy as possible for brokers to get the best prices for their ultimate clients on across two exchanges? So I think what we found is that in an environment where you've got a very dominant incumbent, and I think you'll find this in all market structures, such as the JSE, it is very difficult for new entrants to carve out their areas for them and to become sustainable. And we see, you know, that these entities need to have deep pockets and a long-term strategy. So our approach is to ensure that the opportunities are there, that there aren't any obstacles in the market. And so what that's required us to do, certainly over the past years, to engage with the, for example, with the exchanges or between the CSDs, with all the actors in this ecosystem to make sure that the rules are fair. So, you know, obviously we have different ways in which we can engage. We can engage with the entities and see if we can find a resolution between them. We have regulatory instruments. In order to ensure competition, of course, we can also approach the Competition Commission to either do some research or to give us an opinion or to initiate an investigation. We haven't had to go down that route, although we are preparing a memorandum of understanding and will engage with the Competition Commission to make sure that we, you know, that we have a very strong cooperative relationship. We're also strengthening our internal capacity, or looking to strengthening our internal capacity around understanding competition and competition issues. But I suppose ultimately we have instruments in the form of conduct rules, which enable us to set out very clear rules around interoperability and ways in which entities should engage with each other. So the other issue I think that the Commissioner alluded to already is that we also take into consideration is proportionality in the regulatory framework. So we can't impose the same obligations on, for example, separation in governance functions on smaller entities, but it does mean then that we need to supervise them more proactively. So those are some of the ways in which we are looking at efficiency and integrity. Of course, on the integrity side, we have a market abuse area where we also monitor and initiate investigations. But it's one of the areas in the coming year that we will also focus on from a supervision perspective. We need to understand what kind of disclosures are made, what kind of information is made available. And we need to be very mindful of the role of technology. So that, of course, introduces risks. As I'm sure you're all aware, with data breaches happening all the time, but it also lowers the barriers to entry and the ability of new entrants to come into the market. So what we are looking at all the time is research, monitoring what's happening in the market, engaging with the entities, and then, of course, our supervision role. Let me pause there and answer any additional questions if you may have.
Thank you very much, Astrid, for that. I think maybe just one thing to add around the inclusion piece. We have a very focused approach to supporting inclusive innovation. We have a fintech unit, which runs our regulatory sandbox, where we test various use cases to test whether the regulatory framework is supportive of those kinds of new innovations and what kind of changes we need to make to the extent that the regulatory framework is found to not be supportive. So that's one of the ways that we're driving inclusion, because many of the innovations are actually targeted at being able to include a lot more financial customers, who may find maybe existing offerings expensive or inaccessible, and so on. One of the things that we talk to in the financial sector outlook study, for example, is that the last decade has been a very good decade for access, although we still have a challenge with usage. So a very significantly higher number, I think it was 63% 10 years ago, we are around 80% have access to a bank account. But you still find that a very high proportion of those who have access to a bank account withdraw their funds as they get deposited. And of course, there's a variety of reasons to explain that. So access, we've been quite successful compared to our peers elsewhere. But usage is still a bit of a challenge, as I've said. All right. So that's that on inclusion. Orlando, if you can talk to the regulatory and legislative developments, including COFI and, of course, some of the conduct standards in the retirement space, and also the work that we are doing around the transitional arrangements provided for in FISRA. Orlando, I can't hear you. I don't know if it's just me. Are you unmuted?
We can't hear him either. I think he's finding his voice there. Orlando? No, I think you're muted. Are you muted? All right. Could Orlando help him with you?
No, he's not muted, Chaperson. The problem is with his laptop.
Oh, what's the problem?
I think it's the volume. Can you try and increase the volume, sir?
Orlando is asking that you improve the volume, increase the volume.
Unmute now, you are definitely muted. Sure.
All right. Enough, can't you reply, please, in the meanwhile?
Yes, I'm going to have to cover that then. Sorry, Orlando. So a couple of things. So maybe starting with COFI. So COFI is going to be a very important development in our world. As I mentioned earlier, it's going to be the consolidation of all the conduct-specific or conduct-relevant provisions that we have in central law. Remember that we come from a very industry-based silo approach to conduct regulation. And with the FSA being re-established, if you like, as we are needing to have a common framework, a common basis for conduct regulation in the financial sector. So this is quite important. As I said earlier, while this is taking a bit longer than we had envisaged, given the impact that it's going to have, and given the scope of the work in terms of what pieces of legislation it is touching, we do appreciate that it has to take as long as it has. I see actually Ms. Gibson is just joined, and she might also add on the journey that we've traveled in terms of conduct of financial institutions bill. Let me talk about the transitional arrangements, share your specific question about how long it's taken. The nature of the inquiry here, Chair, is that we are needing to unpack the prudential relevance of certain financial institutions, which traditionally would not have been regarded as sort of prudential entities in the sort of
same category as banks and insurance. What we found was that the 3 years of experience in regulating them in the way that FSRA envisages was not sufficient experience to inform what the future framework should be. What FSRA has done is just to say all prudential regulation is the responsibility of the PA and all conduct is the responsibility of the FSCA, and said that for a few institutions, retirement funds, collective investment schemes, friendly societies, that both prudential and conduct regulation and supervision will be the responsibility of the FSCA. What we are busy working on is whether you actually want to have a cleaner split as you have for other institution types for these. And we're finding that, for example, in the space of retirement funds, the sheer amount of conduct issues really dwarfs some of the prudential concerns, and we're not sure whether it makes sense to split the responsibility and locate it between two entities. That's in terms of efficiency and being pragmatic. So that's the work that we're doing. That's the reason that we approached the Minister for an extension. We are very hopeful that we'll be able to resolve all of those issues, including how you enable them in terms of legislation by 2024, which is our current the date we're working towards. On the question you had on some of the delineations of responsibility between ourselves, CMS, and the prudential authority, and maybe just to focus on CMS, you will remember that in terms of the Financial Sector Regulation Act, we have defined medical schemes to be a financial product, which means that prudential issues pertaining to financial products are the responsibility of the PA, delegated to the Council of Medical Schemes in terms of supervision, and conduct issues are the responsibility of the FSCA, delegated to CMS in terms of supervision. And the work that we need to do in the meantime, again, is whether that is the transitional arrangement is the best approach, or whether we need to have a clean split going forward. There are policy issues with a big P, which should be engagement between the National Treasury and the Department of Health in that space. But in terms of the day-to-day, we need to be quite close as the regulatory entity to understanding where we can be supporting each other, and certainly make sure that there are no gaps that are not covered in terms of customer outcomes, which is the interest and focus of the FSCA. So that's where we are focusing. Your very last question, Chair, was that you were not sure whether on the gender side we're doing well as diversity in terms of race. I can tell you that in terms of the executive committee, which is the four-member committee at the helm of the FSCA, I am the only man. Thank you, Chair. I will leave it there and happy to take any further questions.
The fact that you're the only man doesn't necessarily mean it's representative, but it's very good. It's very rare. But it does mean men are dominated. All right, fine, but that's a facetious remark. It's good. Well, I don't know if it's good, but it's fine. Okay, it's unusual. Let's put it that way. Okay, go on. Is there anybody else who wants to reply?
So I don't know if Orlando is now able. I think he's joined through a different...
Yes, I'm hoping that he might come in now. Is he available? That's what I meant to say. Ask. Yeah. Is he there? Is he available to speak?
I still can't hear him.
All right. So shall we move on? Are there follow-up questions in the meanwhile while Orlando seeks to sort his technical issues out? I don't see any. I see a lot of discourse or exchanges in the chat group. What is that? Yes, Orlando, you're back.
Yes, Jay, it seems I'm back.
All right, good. We can hear you. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Okay. Sincerest apologies for that, Chair, and I missed quite a bit from the Commission.
No, it's fine. Okay, go ahead.
You have to guide me. Yes. So Chair, maybe on the retirement funds side, and we can follow up with further questions. So, Chair, one of the issues COFI will assist us with is around the point the Commissioner mentioned regarding arrear contributions. So this have become quite prominent even within municipality funds, Chair. And part of the challenge is that we don't particularly or directly supervise employers. Employers are not a supervised entity. And so it has become quite difficult, if not near impossible, Chair, to be able to take regulatory action against employers who are not paying through the contributions into the retirement fund. So we have proposed COFI to assist us by introducing, you know, a provision which will deem an employer a supervised entity for a limited scope, and one of those scopes being around arrear contributions, so that at least the regulator can be able to act and probably in certain instances penalize the employer directly and be able to route the penalty money into the retirement fund. So I thought that's one area, you know, within COFI, Chair, which is worth highlighting. Let me stop there, Chair, in case, you know, the Commissioner did address all the other questions, and apologies for the technical glitch.
Okay. Let me see, are there any other follow-ups? No. What I wanted to say, the general point, I don't want to take it further right now, but there's a sense in which, you know, Nati, you give us a lot of statistics, so it's a lot of quantity. It's a quantitative report, at times qualitative. But we don't know enough about what the outcomes are of all those things that you do. I mean, it's not easy to measure. I know you would do some independent surveys and so on, but when we meet with you again, I think some of us at least would like a more qualitative report as well to tell us something about what is the outcome really of what you're doing. So that might help us. Secondly, maybe you need to, I don't know how much of this takes place. I know your independent structure and there are issues around that. But we need to, or you need to engage more with National Treasury more effectively. I don't know what the correct thing to say is, to ensure that there's some movement on the regulatory and legislative changes you might want. But as you say, things move very fast. I mean, when we shaped the Financial Sector Conduct Authority for a parliamentary process, it was endlessly long, as you might recall. We hadn't anticipated COVID and so on. And in some senses, no doubt, it's helped your work. In other senses, it helped. So obviously, there are things the legislature could not have foreseen. But while we are processing the 20th vote, we can always, you know, slide in amendments to make more effective your role in various votes, I'm sure, or in the generic role. So I think more needs to be done in regard to that on your side. We will also raise this with Treasury through our own work, but more importantly, National Assembly meets with them once every quarter to review progress, and there you might want to raise with them because they really do that. They actually do a quarterly review of progress. We don't do that because it's in the space and time. On our side. Having said that, unless there's anybody else who wants to say anything, Dennis, yes, go ahead quickly. We're going to draw to a close. Yeah.
Thanks very much, Chair. Yeah, you picked up on what I was saying with the fact that it's a very clinical report. I think that's a bit more. Yeah, as you say, qualitative information would be most useful. But you know, I just want to point out. I asked the question around trends, hoping to dig a little bit of information out about, because you know the report we're dealing with covers that quarter, you know, right towards the end of the various lockdowns, et cetera, et cetera. And when people were pretty much back at work, you know, and lots of claims were coming through. was to insurance companies, life insurance, claims on pension funds, et cetera, et cetera. And I was hoping to get a bit more information perhaps about the impact of the COVID pandemic and whether the financial sector had been dealing well with the pressures that were put on it. And I think that all of the components in the sector faced the like every business, every other entity as well, faced a change in the demands on their business over the COVID period. And certainly, I mean, the banks started out with a very constructive approach in terms of you know, deferred payments, et cetera, and trying to help people who were not earning an income to ensure that they didn't fall into arrears with their bonds and other payments and so on. I think sometimes that continued, other times that obviously had an horizon because, of course, interest mounts up and there must always be payments coming through at some stage. But I do think that the insurance industry in particular, and as well as pension funds, all had, you know, crazy pressures put on them. And I think a lot of people losing their jobs put a lot of pressure on pension funds, certainly from a liquidity point of view. And I'm not sure that they were all able to act, you know, with the speed that would have been expected. That was what I was pushing at with the trends comment. Perhaps a short comment. I understand we're getting near the end of the meeting, but, you know, I see we've still got lots of time there. So, I don't want to scratch open a whole new topic, but this is really what I was thirsting at. Thank you very much, Chief.
Okay, all right, go for it. Commissioner, you want to reply to that?
Yes, I can do that very briefly. So I think to characterize perhaps the role of the financial sector in the COVID-19 pandemic, I think correctly is to say if you compare their role to previous episodes of crisis, the financial sector was very helpful in how they responded to the COVID-19 crisis, both in terms of the examples that the Honourable Member is giving of payment holidays, premium holidays, restructuring of debts and so on for customers. So that was a particularly helpful approach and response to customers. For the insurance sector specifically, and we do talk to this in the financial sector outlook study, there was a period where there was a lot of uncertainty around business interruption insurance, and those claims were not being paid at the rate that the demand was expecting and required. But as soon as legal issues were resolved and there was a bit of certainty in terms of what is covered and for what period, the experience, certainly in terms of what we were able to gather from the sector and from customers, is that the claims started to be paid and for customers to have their expectations met by the insurance sector. Of course, with the mortality experience of the COVID-19 pandemic, there was huge impact on insurance, on insurers, given the need to have to pay claims. The issue around soundness and liquidity, perhaps the Prudential Authority would be best placed to talk to that a little bit more. But all we can say is that claims were met in terms of the demand of customers. The smaller to medium-sized insurers did have quite negative impacts in terms of their sustainability, and this informed the response of the Prudential Authority, for example, in terms of lenience on some of the regulatory ratios, which were not met by insurers, given the nature of the COVID-19 pandemic. That's all I'll say and add in terms of that. I don't know if Orlando wants to talk specifically on retirement funds and perhaps the experience around liquidation, which I think is relevant to talk to in terms of the COVID-19 experience. And I'll leave it there, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Does you want to come in?
Yes, Chair. I hope you can still hear me.
Now we can hear you. I would just
thank you.
Very retire, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner. So yes, on retirement funds, honorable members, we actually ran a survey in late 2020, just to assess how retirement funds were coping. And because we had previously reminded funds to consider existing rules which will enable the employer and the employee to a certain extent to reduce their contributions, or even in certain instances to completely waive contributions so that it can ease the pressure on the members, particularly because the reality is that, you know, if you are an employer and you are not receiving income because of a hard lockdown, you are not receiving income. It means you are struggling to pay your employees. It means you are struggling to make your own employer contribution into the fund. So we needed to find a flexible way just to assist both the employer and the employee. And the survey, interestingly, showed that around 38% of funds were approached by either the employee or the employer asking for a reduction in contributions. So if you take that as a proxy in terms of the difficulty the fund and the employer were experiencing, it sort of gives a good indication in terms of the impact of COVID on retirement funds. But of course, because our system is largely made up of defined contribution funds, which means nothing is guaranteed to the member, the funds by and large came out quite well. So the survey clearly indicated that the small and medium-sized employers took a hit. They are the ones who struggled the most in terms of those contributions. The large employers fared much better. They were quite resilient through the period. So when you look at your umbrella funds, we did not, you know, see a particular shock when it comes to the large employers, and also your large mining companies and their related funds. The one thing that we stressed on the employer was not to reduce or stop risk benefit premiums, because those relate to life cover. And the worst for an employee is during COVID, God forbid, you know, someone doesn't make it, and only to realize that the employer wasn't paying risk benefit premiums. Then you have an unfortunate situation. So luckily, and as we were going through our stats, you know, the employers at least, you know, play their part when it comes to risk benefits by ensuring that, you know, contributions are at least being made in that regard. And quickly, Chair, on liquidations, yes, we did see a spike during 2020 and 2021, and largely, again, you know, your small, medium-sized employers. We are hoping it will taper off as the hard lockdowns, you know, hopefully are a thing of the past. Thank you, Chair.
I suspect that you are muted, Chair.
Sorry. One of the problems about being in your house is that people ring the bell and often it's people desperate for money, and sometimes you just feel guilty about, well, sitting here in a meeting where we're talking so much. So I had to attend to that. Sorry, I don't think it'll take so long. So can I suggest that we're more or less drawn to a close, unless there's anybody else? I don't see any hands in Kuleleko. No. All right.
No hands, Chair.
I apologize for being away. It normally takes very little because I've got problems. Anyway, I don't want to enter into those issues right now. Now, can I raise something very quickly, members? I see that people say that they have got load shedding. Now, well, so do we all. And that they're going to not participate in the meeting. But as I know it, you know, basically what happens is, you know, your 4G switches on like mine does. I'm on Vodacom. But sometimes the mast of your service provider, cell phone, sort of also because of the power being cut off by Eskom by our municipalities, in my case, often introducing municipality usually, but you know, that switches on. So I know as far as MPs go, we do get an allowance. So, you know, as long as the mask is working, sometimes it doesn't, then we should remain in the meeting. I think the staff also get an allocation. I don't know, I'll follow up on that. But it can't be that every time there's load shedding, we will say, look, we cannot connect to the meeting, unless, of course, the power is off through the mask as well, which does happen at times. So for some reason, in my case, Vodacom continues to function. Okay, having said that, we can discuss that offline. I want to thank the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, all who are here, for a very good input. On the surface, it looks to us very impressive. And hopefully we will, when we meet again, explore more about outcomes. And you will help in that regard by presenting a report that deals with that too. But from what we can see, it's very impressive, Unati. And knowing the caliber of your leadership, I don't know personally many of the others except Orlando, I know that we are in good hands, and I wish you well. And if there's anything our committee can do, you know, to assist your work, you know how to reach me. I'm still on the same cell number, and I think I have yours too. Okay, thank you to members, and we draw to a close.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thanks for your kind words. Cheers.
Thank you.
Deals with that too. But from what we can see, it's very impressive. The others accept. And I wish you assist your work.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. Members.
Put your close.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thanks for your kind words. Cheers.
Thank you.
Okay, it's work. You know how to reach me. I'm still on the same cell number, and I think I have yours too. Okay, thank you to members, and we draw to a close.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thanks for